is always a target for extractive industry. And what history has taught us is that anytime outside industry comes into Indian country and has all these big, promises of jobs and economic development and language revitalization and all of these things, that it tends to not work out for us. We are never the ones that actually truly benefit from that. And we're always the one that ends up having to sacrifice our relationship to land, air, water, our communities, and our non-human relatives as well. And so what we can see from that and learn from that is, like, that is a continuation of settler colonialism in the land grabs that we had seen back in the 1800s. Now we're just seeing a modern day iteration of that, where these corporations are coming in because we have large land bases, grabbing up the land, building, saying that they're going to build with the tribes, offer these things, go back on their promises, and then yet again we are left with the damages and the results and the negative impacts of that. And so I think history tells us that this is just another, this is the same thing with a new face, a new name. And so for us, it was really important that we called it what it is, which is, data colonialism, right? And really pushed back on the physical and the material impacts on our lands.
A recent Bloomberg analysis found electricity costs go up nearly 267% near data centers. Yet a lot of these data centers target poorer tribal nations. If you can talk about the environmental costs, the amount of energy that's required, and also the economic costs.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at, from what we know, like, a lot of times these data centers come with NDAs. So it's really difficult to know exactly how much water usage that they're going to have or how much impact they're going to have on the grid. But what we do know from existing hyperscale data centers that have already been built is that we're looking at anywhere between 300,000 to, like, up to 2.7 million. I've heard even 5 million gallons per year of water that's being used, right? And, like, these corporations, they come in and they present this closed loop water system that they're going to be using, and they tell our nations that there will be zero impact to the water. They also tell us that, in fact, they're going to use water positivity, and they're actually going to increase the usage and the quality of the water so we can actually use it more, which both have been dispelled since then, but it's a very strong narrative. So we know that there's going to be negative impacts on the water based on existing hyperscale data centers. We also know about the noise pollution that comes with these, right? Many times they have diesel generators, but also the noise alone from a hyperscale data center is around 97 decibels. For those of us that know what an LRAD is, a long-range acoustic device, it's a sound cannon that can rupture your eardrums. That's at about 140 decibels, right? So 97 to 140 is not a big jump. And so you're looking at, hearing loss for long-term exposure to the sound that's coming from them. Also, a recent study came out and said that hyperscale data centers can increase the heat and create heat islands up to 16 degrees on the land around them. So if you think about the impacts on ecosystems and the temperature increase of the water that's going to happen, we're looking at ecological collapse around these hyperscale data centers in our communities. And then that's not to mention the rare cancers that have been tied to hyperscale data centers. As we heard before, is the respiratory issues that come from breathing in all the toxins that they emit as well. And then the electricity itself, they need massive amounts of electricity to be powered. And what we're seeing is that they're putting a massive strain on the grid. And so for Native communities, oftentimes our homes and our communities do not have an updated electricity grid, right? The country in general does not have one, and tribes more so. So what we're looking at is rolling power outages that are going to be coming. Also, the threat of fires. When you don't have up to code electricity in your, or electricians in your home, updating the wiring and whatnot, you're looking at the risk of fires if you're going to flood that much electricity into the grid, right? And what we're seeing already is that these data centers, these corporations are already working with groups like our Public Service Commission, our county commissioners, and they're approving upfront costs where the ratepayers and taxpayers pay for these hyperscale data centers upfront before they're even built. So we've already been seeing increases almost double in our electricity bills here in Montana. One winter, I think last winter, we seen a young woman woman with a trailer house have an electricity bill of $900 as a single person in a trailer house in Montana, and we did not have an extreme winter that winter. And so we're already feeling the impacts of the electricity and the cost. You're also looking at the jobs. So they come with promises about jobs and economic development, which in the construction phase, yes, there may be up to 1,500 jobs that are available. Oftentimes, those jobs will not go to local community members. They will go to construction companies who already specialize in building hyperscale data centers. And then once construction phase is over, which can last up to 2 years, those jobs drop all the way down, sometimes to 3 full-time jobs. And so we know that for sure in Rapid City, South Dakota, they've made that public where they go from 1,500 to 3 full-time jobs. And so they actually are not following through on any of the promises that they're making to our communities.
Crystal Tubles, I want to thank you for being with us in this Earth Day special. Crystal is Oglala Lakota, Northern Cheyenne, and Executive Director of Honor the Earth, speaking to us from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Montana. Coming up on this Earth Day, we go to the Arctic Sunrise, a Greenpeace ship sailing with the Global Samud Flotilla, which is en route to Gaza. Stay with us.
I've been thinking about green. Trying to find a way to talk about green.
Greed is a poison rising in the land. The soul of the people twisted in its command. It moves like a virus, seeking out everyone. Greed never stops at work and never, ever done. A creeping, choking, killing, invading. Green sneaky snare. I've been trying to think about how to talk about green.
Greed by Sweet Honey and the Rock, decades ago in our Firehouse studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show from the Arctic Sunrise. That's the name of a Greenpeace ship sailing across the Mediterranean.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program were those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
Hi, my name is Dick Valentine. I'm in a band called Electric Six. You're listening to CJUM, CJUM, 101.5, University of Manitoba. Manitoba.
You're listening to Buy Local on CJUM 101.5, University of Manitoba Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of Buy Local. I have a special spotlight with a guest. This is Jared Adams.
Hey.
Thank you for being on the show. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, my name is Jared Adams. I'm a local musician here in Winnipeg. Got some new music coming out, and I'm playing a couple bands, and that's a little brief bit about me, I guess.
What bands are you in?
Well, I have the Jared Adams Project, which we're kind of here today for, but also I play in a band called Colored by Numbers. We've been doing it for like 13 years or so now, and then a cover band called The Radio Riders with Doug MacArthur, if you know that guy.
Oh, cool. Well, that's really cool. So what is this new music that you're releasing? Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a new single that I wrote quite recently and then recorded back in the fall, and it's sort of just about all the awful things we're kind of seeing in the world today and kind of my frustration with some of these world leaders who are, you know, making the world a worse place. And it's kind of my expression of that and trying to get that out and trying to, you know, hopefully convey some sort of message with it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that these days. Everywhere you look on the news, it's always something. So, we need more good news in the world, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, would you like to share some music first?
Let's do it.
If you like the bands, there's Royal Canoe, then stay tuned because we have his first song, South End Kids, coming up. This is Button Fumbler.
Thank you.
in the Corolla, only sipping the cola. All alone with friends, they be making amends down in Espanola. Gonna rip the seat off, even turn the heat off. Back roads with the roses on the mound, will you kiss a little on? If we ever get through the rushing water, I know we'll make it out. If we ever get through the rushing water, I know we'll make it out. Holy water in the tundra, forget the lines like a mongrel. I'm getting hungry. Oh, she's a bone fungal. Up a bone with sauce around her. Smiles the stone. Nobody ever took on the ground. Your mama don't give a damn what you fall upon. She know we went out. Your mother don't give a damn what you fall upon. She know. There's a clatter of a king can clank in the ground. 20 stories up, you still hear the sound. The sun's up on top of the world, touching our faces in all the delicate places.
suburban life, living in the basement throne. South End kids stealing all the cigarettes, smoking in the bathroom stalls, not knowing who they really are. South End kids, South End kids, South End kids, South End kids.
That was South End Kids with Jared Adams, who is here with us today.
Hey.
You want to tell me a bit more about that song?
Yeah, South End Kids is kind of a song about, funny story, I guess, kind of. I was growing up in, or not growing up, about when I was like in my 20s, I lived in Osborne Village, right at the Roslyn. And, you know, on the weekends, there'd be all these kids that come to the village from the suburbs in the south, you know, and they sort of like go to all the cool bars and stuff, and they'd think that they're the cool kids. And I was like, no, I actually live here. You guys are just posers. You're, you know, whatever. We call them tourists.
I see.
Of course, the ironic thing is that I grew up in St. Mattel, so I really am just one of them as well.
Yeah. Well, that's
kind of what the song's about.
Yeah. So we are going to be playing your new single, Your Own Enemy, coming up right away. Do you want to delve a bit deeper about that?
Yeah, I mean, so the song is kind of specifically about like all the stuff we're seeing over in the Middle East and Gaza and stuff, and sort of these world leaders that kind of try to paint themselves as the victim in order to justify all the horrible things they do.
Yeah.
But I feel like with my music, I like to, even though it does get political, I do like to try to make it about sort of creating some sort of change in the world.
Yeah.
And using music as more than just like a form of expression. It's also meant to like convey a message and try to make some change or whatever. So I have decided that with the release of the song, all the sales from Bandcamp and from streaming and all the ticket sales from the upcoming show on May 1st are going to go to the Palestinian Red Crescent to actually do some good in the world. It's not
That's
just
great.
Putting this music out. It's actually trying to make something better for people, right? Like, it's.
I love that. That is really good to see. I love seeing all the support that you have. So what is going on May 1st with that show?
Yeah, so May 1st, we're doing like a single release show at the Park Alleys with our opener is Riel, a great Winnipeg folk singer. And yeah, like I said, all the money from the ticket sales is going to go to the Palestinian Red Crescent, and the tickets are on sale. You can go to the Park Alley's website. That's $10 in advance or $15 at the door. So if you want to confirm your spot, get one early.
Totally. Definitely do that. In regards to the song Button Fumbler, how does that inspire your music?
So yeah, Royal Canoe is one of those bands where like when I first heard the music, I was like, wow, this is so weird. And then like, as I like, listened to it more and more, I'm like, wow, it's actually incredibly cool. And so actually South End Kids specifically, I actually recorded that at Privateer with JP, which is the same producer that Royal Canoe worked with. And I, you know, I heard their music and I was like, I want my music to sound like that. I'm just going to go work with the guy who produced their music.
That's so. A lucky break that you get a band that from Winnipeg that inspired you so much.
Yeah, and it's really great to work there, work with JP. It's just like, you know, I'd be like, this is kind of what I have in my head. This is what I want it to sound like. And he would just know how to sort of like make those sounds happen and make the mixes happen. And it turned out exactly the way I wanted.
Sometimes the musician-engineer relationship can really like, you can line up and they'll just create something so much like, so it really depends on the people you're working together with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And JP's one of those guys where he knows his role in the whole thing. So instead of trying to overproduce or overstep his bounds, he knows, like, this is what this person's going for. I'm going to help them achieve that as opposed to, like, trying to control the whole project. So it's really great to work with him. He's a super great guy and just really knows his stuff.
That's awesome. What is your process when it comes to writing your songs?
It varies all the time. Sometimes it'll start with a hook, like a chorus hook, or sometimes I'll just have, like, an idea for what I want to talk about in a song, and it'll start with a verse or whatever, or sometimes it's a riff. I mean, most of the time I do sort of have a general idea of, like, hey, this song is going to be about such and such topic, lyrically at least, and then I try to find some music that kind of somewhat fits with that style of where the theme of the song, right? So it's not like, you know, a love song that's over top like metal. Although, I mean, that works. That does work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. There definitely is like metal love songs, but
absolutely.
Generally I try to find a style of music that I think matches what the lyrics are about.
So it's like a lyrics first, music second situation?
Usually, yeah. Usually it's sort of, or at least like a lyrical idea. Maybe not necessarily like full lyrics or anything, but
kind of like a poetry rather than it kind of, or what do they call those? A sonnet?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that comes back to what I was saying before about, like, music being a message and having a change and making a change with it. It's sort of like, to me, the music is about, like, expressing my thoughts and feelings and whatever. And so that's why I think the lyrics come first as opposed to the music coming first.
Music is kind of like a megaphone that lifts up what you're trying to say and gives more oomph to it.
Yeah, basically, yeah, and trying to, like, connect with people.
Mm-hmm. Well, shall we listen to your new song? I am very excited.
Let's put it on.
If you like U2, you'll like Your Own Enemy. First is The Fly, and then Jared Adams' new song.
You guys have made it very difficult to come up with movie ideas. You could basically skip everything.
Protect your glow with the new Garnier Brightening Daily UV Fluid, formulated with vitamins.
That was Your Own Enemy by Jared Adams, who is here with us today. You're listening to UMFM 101.5, University of Manitoba Radio. What is the name of this title, Your Own Enemy? What is that supposed to entail?
Yeah, so like I was mentioning earlier, it's kind of about like the idea of these like world leaders who kind of create their own enemy in order to justify the horrible things they do. And so that's sort of what it's about. It's like, you know, you've made your own enemy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can also take that as sort of like a metaphorical for a lot of people in sort of situations where you kind of like think that you're the bad guy or that you're the victim because of some other situation you've created in your head that's not real or whatever. It's, you know, it can be metaphorical, but I think it's pretty literal in this case.
Yeah, definitely. So when is this coming out again?
This comes out on Friday. So like 2 days from now.
Oh, yes. So you have the music video coming alongside this, and you show me like a preview of it.
Yeah, you got a sneak peek of it, yeah.
All of these headlines, do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, I think for those of you who are going to watch the video on Friday, it's sort of the video also like conveys a message of trying to show all the things that have happened in Gaza and kind of all the bad things and sort of trying to, you know, kind of convey a message of what's going on there so people kind of get an idea and hopefully people understand that it's not a great situation over there right now.
It's very, very powerful. And I'm happy to see stuff like this because even though we're in Canada, we've got to care about all people. I don't see why we wouldn't.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's kind of one of the things that frustrates me the most, seeing things like this in the world. It's like, we could easily just have a world where everyone just kind of gets along,
right?
And agrees. We don't need all this BS of, stuff going on and wars and whatnot.
It's hard to ignore that it's going on because you hear about it all the time. And some people, you could live in bliss and not think about it, which there's like, it's the two sides. It's like, sure, you'd probably feel better. You'd probably live in bliss, but there are so many people out there that could use help. And if you can help, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of my thought with putting music out like this. And sort of my music in general, I try to always have some sort of message in it, I think, that I'm trying to convey. And so this song specifically, yeah, it's, obviously trying to convey a message of what's going on in Palestine. And then also, like I said before, we're raising money with all the sales from the song and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
Trying to do some good with it.
Yeah. So what was it like recording the music video itself?
Yeah, the music video was fun to shoot. Like, we were filming at a Select Start, which is a really cool place. Got a lot of like weird different spaces in there. So it was kind of nice to have a bunch of different locations, but all be in one little area so we can get in and shoot a bunch of stuff real fast. And like, looks like a really high budget video, but it wasn't crazy high budget. It had
convenient.
Some budget, but it wasn't high budget.
Did you play anything while you were there?
No, we got in there before they opened up, so all the arcade games, so I don't think we're turned on quite yet. So,
I see.
Yeah, at least that's my excuse.
Is this one very much writing the words out first? What was the thing that started the writing process for this song, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, this song, I had that main guitar riff, like the main guitar you hear, the dun 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 dun. Had that, and then I kind of knew I wanted to write the song about what was happening in Palestine, and so it took me a while. I think this is probably one of the songs I had like the most revisions and lyrics. Like, I think I have like 4 or 5 pages in a notebook of like different lyrics and stuff that I tried going through. And it took a while to finally settle on some that I think were the ones that made the most sense and had the best like cadence and flow and stuff to them.
Well, that's very interesting. So when you perform this live, you have a backing band with you?
Yeah, on the first, my backing band will be there, and we'll have a full band going for it.
How many members are in the band?
It can fluctuate sometimes. Usually it's about 4.
Oh, cool.
So before on May 1st, we got, I'm on vocals and guitar, obviously. And then we got my friend Dan playing guitar, and Brian's on the bass and Mike on the drums. But sometimes Alex, my other friend of mine, plays keyboards with us. So,
cool.
And sometimes we go as a three-piece, just depending who's available. So it's, it's a little, it fluctuates here and there.
That's a really fascinating format of a band.
Yeah, I mean, as a solo project, it's sort of like I can, have some flexibility. It's not, no set lineup or whatever per se, right? So
mm-hmm.
it's my release show a couple of years ago, I actually had like 10 people on stage at one point, because we had like 3 horns and 2 strings as well as my band. So it was
that
like,
sounds so cool.
Yeah.
So how does U2 influence you?
They're one of those bands that like have kind of always just been one of the bands I've always listened to, and I think their music really early on when I got into like rock music and stuff kind of really influenced the way I sing and play. And I think also, like, I mean, they're also a band that is very, like, political as well in a lot of the earlier music. And I think that also was something that, like, resonated and connected with me. And I don't know, I really just like the, like, we were talking about earlier how they have, like, a really wide variety of music. And I like that with bands where it's mm-hmm. sort of like you can get into them. And it's not just the same album over and over and over again. There's a bunch of variety there.
It's a little bit of U2 for everyone.
Exactly.
It's a little bit of U2 for U2.
There you go. Brilliant.
So, about the recording process for this song, what was that like?
Yeah, so we went into Paintbox Studio with Aaron Bartel back in October. And usually when I go into the studio, I have the song all demoed out first. So I'll have like a whole demo version of the song that has like programmed drums and me doing a really poor job of playing bass. And then, yeah, Brian and Mike came into the studio with me, and we got in there one day, and we did 2 songs while we were there. So the first day we laid down all the bed tracks of like the bass, drums, and then some of my rhythm guitar. Then we did all the other overdubs after that for guitar and vocals and stuff. And so over the course of the 2 days, we recorded these 2 songs, and it was great to work with Aaron. Like, it's he's such a good guy. Like, he's just kind of knows how to get the sound that you want. And yeah, it's just, it was fantastic to work with him. I don't really know how else to say it, but it's just really, he knows how to get good sounds. He's a good engineer, and he's really good when it comes to trying to make sure that you're staying on course with the sound you want out of your song, but also good at, like, you know, giving suggestions sometimes. There's actually one of the other songs we recorded, there's a vocal part that I didn't really like. I did this part, and it was like a really high sort of screamy part, and I was like, I don't know, man, it's not what I want the song to have on it. And he was like, no, it's great. I love it. I'm like, okay, whatever. And so he sent me some mixes, and I heard it. I'm like, I don't really like it. I was like, oh, can you just, like, swap this out for the other vocal part we did? And then he, like, was like, yeah, sure. And then sent me back with the same vocal part in there, and, like, it just sounded better. I'm like, I don't know what you did, but now I like it. So it's like, you know, sometimes I think, like, what will actually make a song good. So it's really good working with him.
Yeah, it's like how we're talking about, like, the working relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
So our next song that we're going to be hearing is going to be from Our Lady Peace. Are they a big influence for you?
Huge. I mean, that's the reason I play guitar.
Wow, really? So, tell me more.
Yeah, years ago when I first started playing guitar, what got me into it was I was into Our Lady Peace, and I found this, like, acoustic version of one of their songs, Clumsy.
Oh, I love that song.
And so it starts off with, like, the studio version has, like, this piano, but I heard them play it on guitar on this acoustic version. I'm like, oh, that sounds really easy. I could probably do that. My dad had a guitar, so I'm like, I'll learn this. I can play these, like, four notes. I was like, oh, yeah, that was easy. But then after that, it's, like, a chord. I'm like, oh, my God, how do I play all six strings at once? So that was kind of what got me into playing guitar, and so they've been a huge influence in my music.
As someone who can't play guitar, I get hung up on the how do I play all six strings at once.
It's, yeah, I mean, the chord part gets, it's hard to get when you're first learning how to play guitar.
So we're going to listen to the song that, frankly, I think has an incredible name, Stop Making Stupid People Famous. This is Our Lady Peace, and then after that it's Welcome to the Metaverse.
Stop! I'll be dreams are coming true.
That was Welcome to the Metaverse by Jared Adams. Kind of an outlook on social media, I take it?
Yeah, somewhat sort of like social media and kind of the idea of eventually, or like not augmented reality, like virtual reality kind of stuff and like living in some sort of virtual world.
Our brains being uploaded into the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, connected to the computers through brain.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get inspired on writing that one?
I've always kind of been interested in like, you know, technology and the advancement of technology and the sort of advancement of the human species and stuff. And it was kind of, that one was sort of just about like, I don't remember what exactly inspired that one, but the idea of like, if you do go live in a virtual world, to not get lost in there and not forget what's real.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And kind of like, you know, keep yourself grounded, huh, even if you're going to go into this like other reality.
It's like, the video really gave you that feel of, like, don't get lost. Don't, like, snap out of it or else you're going to, like, lose yourself completely.
Yeah, and that was kind of, yeah, that video was, like, I made that during the pandemic when sort of AI videos becoming a new thing. And I spent, like, 40 hours over Christmas break making that video. So it was,
yeah. There's a lot of talks of AI these days. It's very controversial, I'd say.
It is. And I, you know, I mean, a lot of the stuff surrounding my last album had a lot of AI artwork and stuff, but it was not, you know, it's not the sort of AI slop you see nowadays where you just type in your one quick command and boom, you got your art. It's like I spent like hours and hours and hours on these things. Like it's, mm-hmm, you know, you use the AI as a sort of a starting point and you kind of go from there.
Yes. It's way better if it's like, it's meant to be a tool. I don't want it to ever replace real artists.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, at the same time as well, a lot of the themes of the album were like technology and the future and stuff. And so it's sort of really connected with like the themes of the album to use that kind
it's
of stuff.
Very interesting outlook and a very interesting use of it. Like, you're purposely making it look like the metaverse because that's what it's supposed
that's what
to
be. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not trying to mimic something to be real, which is very different than a lot of people try and interpret it as.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to go for something that was more like artistic and abstract, I guess. Abstract.
So are there any other bands that you really are influenced by that kind of built your grounds?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lot of bands, a lot of like early 2000s stuff, like Foo Fighters are a huge influence.
I'm wearing a Foo Fighters shirt today.
Shirt. Yeah. Yeah, just a lot of that early 2000s rock, especially a lot of Canadian bands like Tragically Hip and stuff like that. There's, mm-hmm, I mean, we're kind of saturated with it living in Canada, you know, the CRTC and all the rules and stuff. But it's great. It's great. It's good. Good for Canadian music to get out there.
Personally love that rule. That rule is a very very important to this show, which is because
absolutely right.
You have to play at least 50%. You have to play at least 30%, and I'm always at least 50%.
I think we've only had one band so far that's not Canadian, and they're Irish.
Look at that! I didn't even realize that. This is the most bi local episode that could have been so far. Well, soon enough, we'll be listening to. I don't think they're Canadian. MGMT. Are you ever influenced by them?
Yeah, their first album was a huge influence on me. Mm-hmm. I kind of like lost track of them after that, but that first album, really poppy and really just a lot of cool synth stuff going on and electronic drums and stuff. I really, really like that album.
They have such a nostalgic feel to their music.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the song Kids is probably their most popular, and if I'm not mistaken, it's very much about like the themes of nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. It's about being a kid or whatever and trying to, yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember the world or whatever.
So this is Electric Feel, and then after that we're going to listen to Sold Your Soul.
We'll be right back. cleanse your soul tonight. The magic healer, the mystic man. And raise your hands apart and clap them together. The magic healer, you sold your soul tonight.
That was Sold Your Soul by Jared Adams. Before that, it was Electric Feel by MGMT. You are listening to Buy Local on UMFM 101.5. I must say, beautiful artwork for this one.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's the album artwork from Mystic Humanism. Very, very watercolor-y, art, AI art-inspired sort of thing.
What inspired this song particularly?
That one's kind of about, like, I guess cult leaders in a very basic sort of way, but kind of like, you know, this idea of like being led into a cult, like, oh, come along with me, I'll heal you, I'll make your life better and all this stuff. And all these people who are just like grifters and they just kind of scam people for their money or whatever. Sort of like that as, you know, like I said, a lot of my music is very much inspired by the world around me and the things I see and my frustrations with the world. And that was kind of one of them.
Mm-hmm. And then also like your artistry we were talking about, it's very influenced by the 2000s.
Yeah, totally like must be subliminal because it wasn't a very intentional thing to have early 2000s, but it definitely is early 2000s inspired. I mean, the music is for sure, but yeah, the artwork for the album and stuff was not intentional, but it definitely...
Do you know why that might be? Why it's so like 2000s? Does that era resonate with you a lot?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was like, you know, when I first got into playing music and writing music, it was like, well, 2003.
Oh, yeah.
So it was early 2000s. So I definitely think there's some like subconscious thing going on there to kind of always come back to that era.
What's it like being in the music scene? Like, how has it treated you?
It's been good. Yeah, Winnipeg, I think, is a really good music scene. There's a lot of variety of music here and a lot of great musicians and just really communal. Like, people are very accepting and it's just a really great music scene. I mean, I haven't spent a ton of time in other cities to kind of get to know it, but from what I hear about music scenes in other cities, it's people always come back to Winnipeg and say they like it.
what are some of the best bands you've played with?
Like other bands on other bills?
Yeah, like you have like good like in-scene friends.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the bands, like, yeah, there's a lot of great bands right now. One of the ones that comes to mind off the top of my head is Rangers. I don't know if you know who they are. Mm-hmm. But they're fantastic. We had them open for us at the Kelbenover show last year and just love watching them perform. Yeah, I mean, the band like Wonder also is really good. Who else is there to see? I'm on the spot now. I gotta think and not, you know.
We'll have to try and cross paths more so I can learn about all these different bands.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I'm very used to playing all the punk and all the kind of
music.
What
I mean, there's so many different like communities of music in the city that it's so easy to like be in one community and not even realize a whole other one exists.
Like the metal community absolutely is probably the biggest one in the city, and I don't even know much about it either.
Same.
Everyone is in their own little segment, but the thing is, when you put these two types of artists and type of music together, everyone's just so supportive. It doesn't matter, like, if they don't like your genre, they'll like you because of what you're doing.
That's totally it. People like from every different music community will come out to your shows, even if it's not the type of music they play, and they'll be very supportive of it. And it's great to see like that sort of cross-pollination within the music scene.
Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be really cool to have a show where each band is specifically like meant to be a completely different genre, but like, so there's a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Have just like some crazy like variety show of music.
I think that would be really fun.
And you got an idea for your next show.
If there are any promoters listening, please get on this. Well, I think that does it for today. Jared, thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been very fun chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Yes. If you want to see Jared Adams release his new single, Know Your Enemy, see his release show, it will be at Park Alley's on May 1st. Where can you get those tickets?
The Park Alley's website. I think it's just parkalleys.com.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in. My name is Ashley, and this has been Bi-Local. We will see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bi-Local. Art and design for Bi-Local is provided by Mia Danieluk. Intro and outro music is credited to Last Alliance. If you want to get your song on the show, provide suggestions, or just say hi, you can email me at bilocalumfm@gmail.com. My name is Ashley Patnod, signing off.
UMFM's annual funding drive is back, running from 6:30 p.m. on Friday, April 24th to 8 p.m. on Friday, May 1st. 1 week, one goal, one big push to support great radio at UMFM. We're trying to raise $34,000 this year, all of it going straight into the stuff that actually keeps the station alive. Not shiny extras, just the real deal, behind-the-scenes expenses that make UMFM happen. If the station's been a part of your day, on the bus, in the studio, in your kitchen, in your headphones while you're avoiding an assignment, this is the moment where tossing a few bucks our way actually matters. As always, we've got an assortment of new merch to say thank you, all with artwork by Brady Froze, who absolutely crushed it with two amazing designs. Or, as always, you can take a tax receipt. Totally your call. We're not picky. If you want to get ahead of things, hit umfm.com/donate.pledgeorama. April 24th to May 1st. Friends, let's make this happen together.
Good evening. This is the Winnipeg neighborhood Elmwood, and you're listening to New MFM 101.5 FM in Winnipeg. Thank you.